This is the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, March 11th, 2021. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. For this daily dose of observation, insight, and absurdity, hoping that you and yours are doing well, that life finds you on the upside instead of the downside, that if you're at work today, that you passed a handful of hospitals and graveyards and you weren't in any of them. Everything is good. Glad to have you along. Thank you so much for being there. And thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. If you're on the Facebook live feed, I'm waving in your general direction, even though all you can see is the newsroom background. And the podcast folks, thanks for subscribing. Glad you're there every day. It's good to have you along for the ride. It is the Thursday edition of the podcast, the 11th day of March, 2021. And yesterday was one of those days where I was out and about. I schedule haircut appointments. What are you, Mark, a woman? No, I just, where I go, you better schedule an appointment or you're not going to get your haircut. And I've had so many bad experiences walking into the places, you know, in the strip malls where you go in and they, you know, the people, it seems like they're just out of beauty school and they're practicing. They're doing further practice on you. I've had some really, really bad haircuts in those places. But so my wife and I have a relationship with some people who own and operate a salon, and they're just terrific people. And that's where we go. But still, we have to make appointments. And so I've had this appointment for probably a month and a half, because I make two of them out. I keep two ahead. And they're 3 weeks apart, and I'm going to get the wool sheared, and it's on the schedule. And I get this note: hey, we have an outside session planned or scheduled for, let's say, 1:30 in the afternoon. The haircut was at 12:30. They typically don't take too long, but there's distance between the two places. And I thought, well, I'll get in touch with Emily, the girl that cuts my hair. I say, hey, Em, I got a little scheduling tightness here. Let's make it as quick as we can, okay? And she said, no prob. We'll get you in and out. So that's handled. And then yesterday morning, I get a text from Harrison, the video guy on our crew there. And he says, hey, just a heads up, I had to totally take the studio apart yesterday for something else and put it back together again. You might want to be here early to double check that everything is where it's hooked up, where it's supposed to be. So there's no way I'm not getting there. If I get there early, I'll be there like 10 minutes before we start. And hopefully, all he's done is disconnect the microphones and move the cables and, you know, move everything out of the way because they needed some room to shoot a video with some people, or they did a photo shoot or something like that in the same. And they use this same space for various things. And they have a big backdrop, a white backdrop hanging on one wall. And they shoot video against that wall and shoot photos against that wall and do other things with it. And I thought, well, I hope it's working. And then I got another note from Will, who's he's the assistant to the host of the podcast that I produce, Scott Dawson. And Will's telling me, hey, they had to take the studio apart yesterday. You may want to get there early today. And I'm like, really? I let them both know. Well, I'll be there as soon as I can. And fortunately, there was only one problem. There was one microphone in the wrong place, and that was it. And I just, you know, moved it where it needed to be. But I was prepared for the worst. I mean, the worst. And on top of that, I also had other plans, because there are a couple of little issues that have been just bugging the snot out of me for a while. And there were two or three issues. I got one of them fixed last week. And then I ordered some bits and pieces to replace some things that were, they were eBay finds that are just now showing us why they were on eBay. I'll just put it that way. So they're making some noises I don't like. And so I got parts in to replace those. And I was thinking, I've got these cables that I need already. so I won't have to order those cables. I'll just take them out of my back stock here in my studio and we'll be good, because I really don't have any need for them anymore. I'll just donate them to the cause. And when I got there, I had everything tossed on the passenger seat of the family truckster. And so I start picking up the pieces and loading them up in one arm to take in with me. And I grabbed one of those cables and realized this is a little shorter than I thought it was. So maybe I'd best have a look at how long it is. I need about 6 feet of cables, not a long stretch from the mixer to the effects rack, but this was about a 3-footer and there was no way that was going to work. So I left everything in the car and then got on Amazon during the recording of the podcast interview and ordered the correct length cables. So those will be in by probably, they may actually be here tomorrow, and maybe over the weekend I'll go in and replace all of the things that are getting noisy and get that situation squared away. And then next week when we record again, everything will be nice and crisp and clean the way it should be. There's some things I hear things and they bother me. Other people, I'll mention them and they'll go, I didn't hear that. And it's just because I know what it should sound like. And when it doesn't sound like I think it should, it bugs me until I get it fixed. And that's just how it is. And yesterday was a fun day as well, because the podcast guest was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. Just an absolutely brilliant person who has some incredible insights into his area of expertise. And he's really good at teaching in a teaching setting. We enjoyed listening to what he had to say, but the whole time we were kind of shaking our heads thinking, most people, because this podcast we produce is kind of lighthearted usually, and it's upbeat, and it's when it's not, there is a certain energy to it that keeps you involved, which was impossible to do with what we had yesterday. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's great. It's just a different flavor than we normally do. And at the end of it, we were like, wow. It was 45 minutes of talking about things, and Scott got to ask like 4 questions in the entire time, because there would be a question and there would be a long answer to the question, which was substantive and deep and very interesting, but there was not the joking back and forth and the stuff that we are normally accustomed to having. And it was a different day. And we both looked at each other afterwards and said, wow, this was different. But still, we want to have the same guy back again to talk about certain things which are starting to become interesting in the Middle East. And that will be an interesting day to get to certain points, to find out historically and biblically why certain things are happening in the Middle East. That'll be an interesting day. So if that's the kind of stuff that interests you, if you are interested in historical and biblical backgrounds for what's happened as far as Israel is concerned, this is going to be your cup of tea. And I suggest that you get the next edition of the Dawson Now podcast. It drops next Tuesday night. In fact, I've got it here. I've got it on my drive. I've got to drop it into my system, and I've got to do it. I've got to actually put all the pieces together for next week. But it will be ready and ready for download about 8 o'clock Central next Tuesday night, if you'd like to grab that. It's very interesting. Very interesting. It is not a laugh fest like we, you know, it's not a lot of kidding around and joking and like we tend to have along the way. It's pretty serious stuff, but it's brilliant, as I said, brilliant. And that was yesterday. What else was there? Oh, yeah, I did some more testing, some audio stream testing yesterday for the project I've been working on, which I can't tell you about. But it was all perfect, just exactly what I hoped it would be. And so that's another step in the right direction. And I got to tell you, when I can tell you about this project, I'm going to be really happy. All I can do right now is just drop little hints about how it's going. And those of you who are podcast subscribers who have been listening to me and my buddy Dave for a long time will be very, very happy. It is, we're about 8 minutes, or no, we're not, we're about 10 minutes into today's podcast, and Now we're caught up, at least on the personal side. And it's time to turn our attention to the oddness that is the political scene. It is definitely not... sometimes it's very serious. Sometimes you just can't take it seriously. No, it's not that funny. Please, it's not. The gymnastics, the mental and verbal gymnastics that go on when politicians address the public and reporters who actually do their job by being real journalists, by asking probing questions, which just doesn't happen anymore. It really doesn't happen. Even during the Trump administration, when these reporters would, like Jim Acosta, what a joke, would speak truth to power, all they were doing was challenging something they disagreed with, but their disagreement was based on leftist ideology, which is a fantasy. It's a delusion. And so you can't call that deep probing. It's just challenging something you disagree with because you don't like it. Well, now Peter Ducey, the son of Steve Ducey, who's on Fox and Friends every morning on the Fox network, which has lost slews of listeners and people are very unhappy with them. But since they what was it? They called Arkansas way before it was actually concluded there. The decision was made there. And so people said, oh, that's it. We can't trust you anymore. Well, Peter Ducey is in the crowd sitting out there in his sport jacket and his tie, wearing his mask, and he's asking some actual real questions. And a handful of others are as well, but not enough. They're just not enough of them. They want to know about why isn't there a cat in the White House? What happened to the White House cat? They're asking questions about Biden's dogs. They're asking questions about what flavor ice cream he likes. They're not asking probing questions about what's really going on. For example, on the border. And coming from TheBlaze.com, Chris Enloe writes a story about this. The White House Press Secretary Jen Circleback Psaki was confronted Tuesday about the intensifying border crisis and whether the Biden administration's immigration rhetoric is magnifying that problem. And she was peppered with questions about the wave of unaccompanied migrant children traveling into the U.S. and particularly why the Biden administration has refused thus far to describe the growing problem as a crisis. Thousands of unaccompanied migrants have entered the U.S. And hang on here. I'm just making sure I've got this particular. Okay, I didn't need that. I thought I had a piece of audio to go with this, but that was the next one. Migrant children are reportedly being housed in detention facilities akin to jails and are being separated from their families. Now, remember all of the upset and the anger over children in cages? Guess what's happening? The children are still being caged. Although it's not chain link fence, they're still being locked in temporary housing trailers with bars on the windows. So they are still children in cages. But they will never call it that because the Biden administration is dishonest. And the leftist reporters are dishonest. Unfortunately for President Joe Biden, the problem's only expected to grow. In fact, according to Homeland Security estimates, immigration officials expect a record 117,000 accompanied minors to travel to the U.S. this year alone. That's according to Axios. Canadian journalist Richard Leitendres confronted Circleback Psaki over why the Biden administration uses language that sounds like extending an invitation for migrants to come to the U.S. despite growing crisis. They've been saying now is not the time to come. Really? Now is not the time to come? Doesn't that sound like there will be a time to come? And doesn't that set things up for people to come here? That was the tack he took when talking to Psaki. And after the break, we'll get to what she answered as the Daily Perspective podcast continues. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Thursday edition. It's one of those filler days that get no respect. Thanks, Rodney. Tuesday and Thursday. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday get all the attention. Why?
I think they're all equal.
Okay, back to Circle Back Saki. Canadian journalist Richard Leitendress confronted Jen Psaki over why the Biden administration uses language that sounds like extending an invitation for migrants to come to the United States despite the growing crisis. During the Biden transition, a senior transition official told NBC News that migrants seeking asylum need to understand they're not going to be able to come to the United States immediately. The Biden administration has maintained language that suggests they want migrants to come to the U.S., just not right now. Leitendress asked, "You keep repeating this is not the time to come. Isn't that sending the signal that there will be a time to come? Just wait?" Psaki had, in fact, used the exact phrase, "This is not the time to come," in reference to migrants, three times during that briefing on Tuesday. In response to the question, Psaki launched into a polemic against the Trump administration after first explaining the administration's posture toward migrant children. She said, "When we say it's not time to come now, the reason is this is we're still digging our way out of a dismantled, immoral, and ineffective immigration policy that was being implemented by the last administration that was largely based around funding for a border wall. It's going to take us some time, and we do want to put in place, modernize the immigration system, which means investing in smart security, which means creating a pathway to citizenship, which means funding and supporting efforts to address the root causes in the region. And we, as part of that, we want to ensure that there is effective processing at the border." Oh, we're going to come back to her statement. Trust me. Psaki was asked multiple times why the Biden administration refuses to call the situation at the border a crisis. And she said, "Look, I don't think we need to sit here and put new labels on what we have already conveyed as challenging. What we have conveyed is a top priority for the president. What our policy teams are working on every single day." Wow.
Keep repeating, This is not the time to come. Will there be a... is not sending the signal that there will be a time to come. Just wait.
Well, first, to be clear, even these unaccompanied children who come across the border, who we've talked about, we want to keep safe. We want to ensure they are in shelters where there is access to educational services, legal services, health services. We want to ensure that they are then quickly moved to vetted families or sponsor homes. Many of them don't stay because they go through the process of having their applications reviewed. We just want to keep them safe because they are kids under the age of 18. And when we say it's not the time to come now, the reason is we are still digging our way out of a dismantled, immoral, and ineffective immigration policy that was being implemented by the last administration that was largely based around funding for a border wall. It's going to take us some time. And we do want to put in place and modernize the immigration system, which means investing in smart security, which means creating a pathway to citizenship, which means funding and supporting efforts to address the root causes in the region. And we, as a part of that, we want to ensure that there is effective processing at the border. We're not trying to close our borders. We are trying to create an effective, moral, humane system. It's going to take some time to do that.
Yeah. Let's take a look at part of what she had to say. "We are still digging our way out of a dismantled, immoral, and ineffective immigration policy that was implemented by the last administration that was largely based around funding for a border wall." Immoral. How is it immoral to protect the sovereignty of the United States of America by preventing people from entering our nation without going through the legal process to do so, to come through the front door? How is it immoral to lock the back door? How is it immoral to to greet people at the front door to make sure they belong in our country. How is that immoral? How is it ineffective when that illegal entry into our country dropped drastically while these policies were in place? How is that ineffective? It was extremely effective. Was it based on funding for a border wall? No. She's turned it around completely. The border wall was proposed and promised during the campaign in 2016 because the American people echoed back and said, yes, this is what we want. And so the attention to that was dialed up. President Trump saw this is what America wants, and so he continued to promise that he was going to build a wall. And you may be saying, yeah, well, he didn't. Well, he built almost 500 miles of it. And he did so fighting for every inch of it, every single inch of it. The border wall is symbolic. It was and is symbolic. And the symbolism goes to those people who would enter our country through the back door, not coming through the front door, not going through the process of being interviewed and examined to be sure they need to be here. It was a symbol to those people, you shall not pass here. It was Gandalf on the bridge, doggone it. You shall not pass. And it was effective because it reduced the amount of illegal immigration influx into the United States of America dramatically. Now, the only reason it could be ineffective is if your purpose was to allow these people to come into this country and then say, oh, that's okay. We understand. We forgive you. Your life is so hard. We'd like to forgive you for breaking our sovereign nation's laws and your nation's laws by crossing illegally into our nation, totally and completely disregarding the laws of two, sometimes three or more sovereign nations. These people, because of this action, because laws are already on the books in these nations, the nation they came from, the nations they cross, the nation they enter, laws are on the books saying, you shall not do these things. Because these laws are in place, and because they ignored and transgressed these laws, these people, regardless of their motivation, are criminals. They are criminals. They have broken the laws of sovereign nations to do what they want to do. Jen Psaki and the leftists she works for don't care. In fact, they want these people in the United States. Why? Because they know that these people want something for nothing. They have been told that they will get a check every month. They have been told that they will be supported by the United States of America. They have been promised things. Not so much by politicians standing in front of cameras, but by agents of those politicians spreading leaflets, flyers, and other things in their countries, saying, come to the United States. These things are happening. The reports are out there. Do your homework. They're being told to come here, that their life will be better. And so they ignore the laws set in place by the country they lived in. If they live in Central America, they're crossing borders. Their country's border with the next country over, the next country over, the border with our country. They're transgressing the sovereign laws of sovereign nations in order to get what they want. Now, when a thug walks into a convenience store and takes what he wants from that convenience store without paying for it, that's a crime. When someone crosses the border of one, two, three nations against the law to go and live where he wants, just because he or she wants to live there, that's a crime. They should be dealt with legally, not forgiven and embraced. The Democrats know they want to live here, and they're fine with it because they know these people will vote for them and keep them in power. That's why. They're calling the previous administration's lawful actions as immoral. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, about halfway through this Thursday edition for March 11th, 2021. It's good to have you along today. Thanks so much for being there. Just updating things at linkreport.us, making sure we have the links to today's stories on the page so you can jump to those stories and read them for yourself. And sometimes, every now and then, it's hard to do that because the something about the page link won't transfer the way I want it to. So you just get a link instead of actually an excerpt from the story and a picture and all that stuff. So just bear with it. It's kind of weird, but that's my morning today. I'm just, you know, trying to get things updated for you. It's not cooperating. In Texas, where they are faced with issues, many issues, the border crisis being one of them, there is a school system, a school district, which has decided it wants to be uniquely Texan. Because they decided that this whole COVID-19 thing was being misrepresented, and they decided to do something a little differently, to handle things differently than the rest of the country. A school district, a rural school district in Texas, defied the experts and the orders from government masters when it came to face masks and social distancing in reaction to the coronavirus pandemic. Instead of bowing to pressure, the district worked with parents to open schools in August without COVID restrictions or mandates. And by all accounts, the students there are thriving. Pester Independent School District has no distancing, no required face masks, no mandatory quarantines since school started last August. This is according to a report coming from KTVT Television that came out on Monday. The students have had a 100% normal school experience this school year. Nothing has been canceled. No one has been quarantined. Superintendent Lance Johnson says, and the kids in Pester, Texas have thrived. It all goes back to a decision last year that virtual schooling would not be successful for this community. The Pester, Texas, PISD, surveyed families to see what they wanted for their kids, what they would be comfortable with. And according to the TV station, 55% of the parents said they'd send their kids to school if masks and social distancing were required for all grades. When the district asked about offering a school year as close to normal as possible, that number jumped to 86%. And it appears to have paid off. The school year started on time in August. Nobody's looked back since. In the district of more than 1,400 students, only 8 students are still learning online. Daily attendance now is higher than it was a year ago. There were only about a dozen more teacher absences in the fall over a year ago, but no cases of COVID-19 in the first 10 weeks of the school year among students or staff. Only a few COVID cases were recorded by the end of 2020, and no cases have been recorded this year. District data shows that most students in PISD will finish the year at grade level. as the district has closed the learning gaps that were created when schools shut down in the spring. According to Johnson, the teachers, school board, and community stood in solidarity to do what is best for the kids. And what's best for kids is having them in school, in front of a teacher, learning in a traditional school model. Personal responsibility played a big part. Any students or teachers who felt ill stayed home, recovered, and came back when they were healthy. It all comes down to doing their jobs, the superintendent says. He said, it's real simple. We've just done it. It's not that difficult if you really put the needs of kids first. And I think he's nailed it. They put the needs of kids ahead of the wants of a union and politicians. And please take note of what he did say. Personal responsibility played a big part. Students and teachers who felt ill stayed home, recovered, and came back when they were healthy. Gee, imagine that. When there's something going around like the flu, isn't that what we do? If you get sick, instead of getting everybody else sick, you stay home, get over it, and then when you're over it, you go back to work, to school, to whatever. It's not rocket science. It's common sense that we've acquired over years of dealing with things like the flu and cold season. If you feel bad, you stay home, you get over it, and then you come back when you're not going to infect anybody. It's been common practice, common sense for decades. And this school system just proved that sending our kids back to school using common sense practices can be done, and it's not dangerous to anyone. Oh, but what if somebody doesn't follow the rules? Well, then they have a 99.7% chance of surviving. This hysteria that's been created by the politicians, by the news media, and by the teachers' unions is irresponsible. But as I've told you before, it's a tactic. It's a fear tactic. Politicians use fear to manipulate people. It's gone on for a long, 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 long time. People in power will frighten people in order to get permission to do what they want to do from the people. We have a deadly pandemic. Oh my God! We got to do something. Do something about it. But whatever you need to do, do it. And guess what happens? They pass laws. Everybody's all in. Yes, we've got to deal with this. And there really wasn't that much to deal with. Now, the CDC has some school guidelines. And when you don't abide by those guidelines, the political class, especially the leftist political class and the news media, tends to look at you like you're some sort of a freak. What, are you crazy? No, we're not crazy. We just happen to think instead of blindly accept. And circle back, Psaki was asked at a press conference about getting kids back to school. What did she have to say?
The CDC is saying schools, you can be at every school can be at full capacity.
With the CDC guidelines, the CDC guidelines, just to be clear, because I think this is very important to be very clear and specific on, they gave 8 mitigation steps that schools can take to safely reopen. a number of schools have actually recently reopened. Schools in Washington, D.C., some have, schools in many districts across the country. But each school district needs to make the decision about whether they are able to take those mitigation steps. The president has also been clear, some of these school districts need additional funding. There's $160 billion in this package that he's going to sign into law later this week. Secretary of Education will be quite focused on working with school districts to help them reopen. But more school districts are reopening. More kids are in classrooms every single day.
But since they are not all back, from an administration position or from your perspective, have the Border Patrol unions and the HHS unions been easier to work with than the teachers' unions?
Listen to what she says.
I think that's a little bit of mixing different circumstances. I would say that
It's children all in tight quarters. A classroom, but...
Not quite. I would say that let's take a responsible approach to the two issues, okay?
And
one is
back.
Schools reopening. There's been 8 mitigation steps that have been announced by the CDC to implement, right?
Blah, blah, blah.
Every school district is going to work to implement those on a timeline that is they can effectively do. Many school districts are reopening, right? Many are reopening every single week and day and week. Right? That is a different circumstance than what we are seeing at the border. And the HHS oversees these facilities, right? They're working with, they're working on ensuring we can have more kids safely. They are working to implement CDC guidelines, but they are different circumstances. And certainly we're working with the school districts, and we're also working with HHS to open these facilities or to ensure that kids are treated with safety and care in these facilities.
Oh, well done. Well done, Jim. Well done. You recited the talking points perfectly. Thank you. Thank you so much for sticking to your script, which is exactly what she did. When she was challenged by Steve Ducey, that's who that was, when she was, not Steve, Peter Ducey, when she was challenged by Peter Ducey about the handling, and he did a comparison between working with kids on the border and working with our own kids in schools, she stammered. She realized he had her. That there was an identical situation, because we're finding out that they're not screening these kids. They're not doing their job. They're not screening these kids. They're letting a lot of people on the border enter the country without being screened. So, and dealt with properly. And so he alluded to that, and then she said, no, we're looking at two different situations. No, actually, we're not. The common thread here is COVID-19. The common thread here is the pandemic. The common thread is that they aren't doing what they should be doing on the border, but they're taking it to the other extreme in the classrooms. That somebody is calling the shots and keeping these school districts from doing what they could be doing, which is putting kids back in school, just like they did in this little town, Peaster Independent School District in Texas. In Peaster, Texas, they've got it right. They just use common sense. And if you're sick, you stay home, you get over it, and you come back and don't infect anybody, which is what we've always done with anything that comes our way. Every flu season, people are told, you need to go home and get over this and then come back when you're done. You and I both have worked in those offices and seen people pack their stuff and head home, sniffles, Kleenex in hand, saying, I'll be back after I get my shot and I get over this. But for some reason, we can't do that with COVID. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. The final segment for Thursday, the 11th day of March, 2021. Oh, man. I'm doing one of those coin flip things, trying to decide which one of these stories to do as the final one for the day. And I got a winner now. Okay, we're going to go that way. Oh, Mr. Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House. Has had a few words to say about the bill H.R. 1, the For the People Act. And I just want to say the name. I want to say this about the name. The For the People, it's a very communist name. It really is a very communist name. They play on this a lot, where they pretend to be for the people, but really they're for the powers controlling the people. That's what it amounts to. And I just can't help but be amazed that they're as bold as they are today. And this particular act, this H.R. 1, is one of the most blatantly communist things that these people have ever done. Coming from CNSnews.com, H.R. 1, the For the People Act, should instead be called the Professional Politicians Corrupt Election Act, because it doesn't require the voting rolls to be purged of dead people, and you won't know who's voting. So says former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. He said so on Fox Business's Mornings with Maria Bartiromo Friday. Quote, the Democrats have got these fancy names. H.R. 1 should be called the Professional Politicians Corrupt Election Act because that's what it is. It's an effort to create an environment really based on the history of Tammany Hall in New York, Philadelphia Machine, Chicago, what the California Democrats have evolved. This is an effort to say you're not going to know who's voting. There won't be a requirement to purge the rolls of people who are dead. There's not going to be any ability to control, for example, the Service Employees Union. You remember SEU or SEIU or SEUI, the Service Employees Union International, yeah, which might be servicing a nursing home, going around to all of the senior citizens in that home and giving them a chance to vote with the person who takes care of them picking up the ballot. Now, you know, just human nature. That creates a biased environment, an environment, frankly, of some fear and some intimidation. Yet this bill, on every front, they've managed to take a position that the American people oppose. And I think it's madness what they're doing. And I think the number of marginal Democrats, the last two times the Democrats had the White House, we picked up 54 seats in 94, he points out. We picked up 63 in 2010. I think they're setting themselves up for that kind of a disastrous election because they're trotting out all of their marginal members and getting them to vote for things that they will not be able to defend when they go back up. Who wants to have the government paying for politicians? This bill does. Who wants to have 16-year-olds voting? This bill does. You go right down the list. He also pointed out that there's a stricter standard for recalling California Governor Gavin Newsom than there is for voting in the general election. He says the recall petition in California actually requires that you be able to identify every single signature. So we have a stricter standard for recalling the governor of California than we have for voting in a general election. But look, if you're a liberal Democrat, you figure the younger they are, the less they know, the more likely you are to get their vote. And so this is a deliberate effort to flood the system, and I think it's going to. I think it'll be stopped in the Senate, and I think it's an enormous overreach to go out there and to say to all 50 states that Uncle Sam sitting in Washington will now dictate. It's kind of funny. So the Nancy Pelosi team in Washington will dictate how you're going to vote while the California internet giants dictate what you're allowed to say, and then they're going to think that's a free society. I think people will reject it. On the issue of reopening schools, Gingrich said that the teachers' union is the number one ally of the Chinese Communist Party because of the damage being done to U.S. education with public schools being closed for so long. He says the number one ally of the Chinese Communist Party in the United States is the teachers' union. The damage we are doing to a generation of children because of the teachers' union's terrible attitude and terrible work rules is in fact potentially going to make it impossible for us to compete with China. I mean, they're working very hard. They're very disciplined. They require people to learn, and they require people to learn in school. They actually are investing rationally. Meanwhile, we are totally mired down in a political disaster. We have public schools in which not a single student, not one, has passed any kind of exam. We now have the kids not even going to the schools. And we think we're going to compete with China? I mean, this, we need a serious national discussion of whether we want to be a serious country and we want to be the leading country in the world, or whether decaying into corruption and ignorance is an acceptable American future, because that's what we're getting. You look at the damage done to the current generation of children. It's unbelievable. He says, we have public schools in which not a single student, not one, has passed any kind of exam. Did you see the story just the other day about the student who had passed three grades without passing a single exam? Literally failed every grade and was promoted anyway. Had to go back down. That is a symbol of what's wrong with the American education system today, among many other things. Many other things. One of them being that children aren't being taught the history of our nation anymore. They're being taught leftist opinion of the history of our nation, not the history of our nation. Back to the other thing he's talking about, H.R. 1. We've talked about that here before. We've gone into detail. Actually, over at linkreport.us, there are articles about H.R. 1. You need to go look at them. I've left them up because you need to know about H.R. 1. You need to know what's in these bills. You need to go to linkreport.us, find those H.R. 1 stories, copy and paste and save those links to send to your friends, because they need to understand the damage that this bill will do to our nation. California, Newt refers to California and how their system changed. And now the leftists, the communists in Congress want the same thing nationwide. What happened in California was they instituted all of these things, the early voting, the late voting, the mail-in voting, to every sending out ballots to everybody, even if they haven't required them or requested them. Not validating signatures, being able to vote harvest, all of the things that we know are problematic and fraught with security issues, all of those things which undermines the security of your vote were embraced by California. And after they put that into effect, not a single Republican won anywhere. Democrats won and now control the state of California. They have in California the result of what the Democrats in Congress want to do to the entire country. And go take an objective, honest look at what's happened to the state of California. The businesses which have been suffering for so long, which have finally decided we can't stay here anymore. The companies which have picked up and moved. The people which can't earn a living there anymore. And the cost of living is so high they can't afford to live there anymore. Picking up and moving other places. Sadly, they take their leftist views with them when they go, and they vote for the same kind of stupidity that caused them to move wherever they move to. That's happening in Texas right now. And it's not just that, just so you understand, in Texas, it's not just Californians moving to Texas that are creating their issues there. Texas is literally under attack. Texas has been targeted by the left. They're doing everything they can to put people in charge in government, first in little positions which you wouldn't even think about. Just they're campaigning and having people put into positions in county governments and city governments who will push everything as hard to the left as they can on the local level. And then, like dominoes, from the local level to the regional level to the state level, things all start dropping to the left. And more of those policies are accepted by more and more people because they just don't understand. They just know that's what they did back home. So it should be fine for the whole state, right? And so everything begins to change. And before you know it, your state is no longer red, it's blue. And you're sitting there scratching your head wondering how it happened. And what happened was that the left treated you like the frog in the pot and slowly turned the heat up so you didn't know the difference. And now it's getting uncomfortable. That's what's happening in Texas and in other states. And if the leftists in Congress get their way and H.R. 1 is passed, we will never have a secure, fair election ever again. Your vote, you know, you fuss about your vote being meaningless from time to time. If this happens, if this passes, your vote will be meaningless. Because what happened in this election that took the election away from Donald Trump will happen in every election. And that's enough for today. Thanks so much for being there. God bless you. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.